This is a continuation of my conversation with Gabe Storres, a therapist I met through my research work. In this snippet of our conversation, we talk about how individuals can keep up with their daily experiences and express their truth through creative activities.
We're moving away from the traditions that we've gotten so used to into a world where we get to explore our own identity and we get to explore our own selves through the practices that we do artistically, spiritually, poetically, the poems, the art, the spiritual practices that we do. And I wonder how these aspects of self can be used to understand our own mental health. And what do you think about that? How can they be tools for our development?
Mm-hmm. And self-understanding and artistic expression. This is when I think and say that everyone is a creator and an artist. And I think that, I'm going back
to
the
brain. To unpack.
Yeah, it's a beautiful question. I love that question. So there are so many things that are so difficult to express through words. Like, you know, that sometimes you go through a heck of a lot of trauma and it's like the moment that you try to describe it verbally, it's hard. Need to be explained. And there's a part of our brain that does shut down, which is called the Broca's area, whenever we experience extreme trauma. It's like, it's the part of our brains that functions speech production, that produces speech. And I also like to think that because we're such a multilingual culture, it's like we kind of mix up Tagalog and English. Sometimes now if I want to express myself, it's so hard to choose one, language over the other. Yeah. And some of us, because, there are limitations to language. Language is important, but there are limitations to it. So people resort to metaphor. People resort to poetry, I think that spiritual practices are also artistic expression. We diversify the ways in which we understand ourselves. Because there is that need to marinate or to process our emotion. And there's something about the tangibility or the fact that you can hold the creation, the fact that you can create the tune that kind of like affirms or validates the experience. Like, for instance, I keep going back to breakups, but a breakup, usually whenever I have a breakup,
it's such a common experience that we understand it anyway, right? So go ahead.
Right. So sometimes to write something about it is a way that I can process the pain, is a way that I can just let it out. And sometimes whenever I read the poem, whenever I listen to the song, I still have those surprising eureka moments. I'm like, I wrote that, or that's how I felt. So you're kind of like getting to know yourself in that process. I don't know if I'm like answering your question, but it's like there's something about creation or recreation that it's not just a one-sided relationship where you're just the creator or the artist and you have the art or the creation. Yeah. Your creation also shapes you. It also changes you. It also helps you understand you.
Yeah. And I think if I were to summarize what you just said and beautifully, what you beautifully said, it would be that language is limited and creation makes spirit tangible.
Yeah. I love that.
Right.
Thank you.
And so when we create, we become. When we create, we are able to see ourselves in our creation.
Yeah. And when I think too, along with create, when we play, we become. I think that what we're doing right now is a form of creation and play.
Right.
Like there's a spontaneity to it. There's an agreement to it. We're just welcoming ideas.
Well, at the same time, having a structure that kind of allows us to, like a skeleton where we just put meat on it and see where it goes, right?
We got boundaries.
We have that. Yeah, definitely. Frameworks are so important when it comes to figuring out the kind of identity that we have, the kind of practices that we have, because we can say that we create whatever, but it doesn't come from nowhere, right? It comes from somewhere, and we place it on something so that it would make sense. And that something could be, for example, art or poetry, or you know, a painting, or a work of a book could be. A graphic design, even maybe a comic strip, a zine. But what I particularly am very interested in is how it is expressed through spiritual practice.
Yeah.
And you think also of mental health in the sense of the spiritual aspect of it, but we don't really think of spirituality as creation, when in fact that's the point of spirituality, is we create something of our vulnerabilities. From our vulnerabilities, we create intentions, we manifest desires, and through our prayers, we are able to co-create a world that is more bearable to live in.
Yes.
Ooh. And that's just the beauty, I think, of when we use the structures of spirituality to create.
Yeah.
And I'm not only talking about the majority of the Filipinos who practice Filipino Christianity and Catholicism, but that definitely is a real aspect, and I'm not going to invalidate the millions of Filipinos who experience truth and reality in that faith, while at the same time recognizing that there are so many other smaller, more personal ways of expressing the self that are also deeply spiritual.
Yes.
Such as, for example, I don't know, maybe someone might express themselves through tarot, astrology, all these tools for self-reflection, maybe of thought. And I think that that's beautiful also, because these practices draw from ancient wisdom and are universal ideas expressed in the mind that can barely use language. And
right.
You were talking about how language is so limited, and it can't really express the fullness of spirit, the fullness of creation. And so when we look at tarot imagery, when we look at the stars, we see figures and gods and everything, and all our mythology as well have this creative aspect to it. What do you think of that?
The innate archetypes.
Yeah.
The images and the roles and the parts of our ecosystem and the parts of our being that are transcendent, right? And that's such a, I love the concept of archetypes. I was actually just, I have like this oracle deck on archetypes, which is also Jungian. I just did a spread on it before we started our podcast conversation. I think that it's so beautiful to bask and admire the ways in which we still have connecting points as human beings. You know, we could still honor the differences of language, the differences of tradition, the differences of spirituality, and not changing a thing about each other unless it's harmful, unless it's oppressive, unless it's dehumanizing, and still know that we still have those connecting pieces. Like we have mothers or birthing people around the world. We still recognize that role.
Right.
We recognize the mountain. We just have different names for it and what it represents for each culture.
Yeah.
I think about the myths or the creation stories, diba, that have shared that, you know, no matter how far we are from certain lands, like they have similar characters within that myth, within that creation story. So that just brings me to just how phenomenal the universe is, and how in seeing how connected we are, and what that does to my mental health, knowing that that I, as you said, like, I don't come from a vacuum. I have like this, I'm kind of like an important chord in this orchestra, of stories.
Yeah. You are both the conductor and the part of the orchestra. And interesting that you mentioned creation myth, because I remember just now one of the creation myth of the people who make anting-antings, the people who make talismans and amulets. They have this creation myth drawn from this occult book called Karunungan ng Diyos. And the idea there is, it's a folk Catholic book. And diba in the Bible, it said that, oh, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God, and so on. Now, the idea here is, in the creation myth, what if you knew what the Word was? If you knew what the Word was, then you would be able to also have God's powers. The creation, the power of God, which is why there are so many magical words, and words are not just informative but performative as well as spells. And language as a form of creation in itself, and we know that it's limited. We acknowledge that language is limited in our expression of the self, but language also shapes the world. We have a word for almost everything. And something doesn't exist if we can't name it. And when we finally name something, it comes into being.
That's why we call it spelling, right? We spell certain words. We're like already casting spells without even knowing it. We're kind of like demystifying it. And it makes sense too why I love the growing community that is manifesting, like people who manifest. I know that it can be a complicated world too, because people misunderstand manifestation as a way of just naming the thing, but not really putting intention into it. But there's, you know, there's a community that says, you know, what they want, and that is for the highest good, and then works towards it. Like, there's the agency. But yeah, the power of language. And it's also like the foundation of how you and I communicate, you know, along with the nonverbal cues. Like, language is not just verbal stuff. Like, we have nonverbal language. We have love languages. We have creative forms of language.
Yeah. And so many different ways of expressing the self as well that we also call language, because that's how we communicate. And that's how we communicate ourselves. But you mentioned nonverbal languages. That brings me to the idea of what we call pakikiramdam in the Philippine experience. And it's such a real thing. It's such a raw, visceral, almost telepathic kind of understanding, a communication with how do I don't want to cross your boundaries. I want to understand your mood. So I just feel with you. I feel your experience. It's a hyper empathy.
Oof.
Right?
Yes. I love that. And I love that you bring this up. We're a very intuitive people. And I think that has to do with the fact that we're a very embodied people. You know, like, I think about something as simple as we eat food with our hands. It's called kamayan. Is it the tradition? Oh my gosh. Yeah. I feel ashamed for not remembering. So we eat on the banana leaves, like the food is, and I think about how we're also, like, compared to how it is in the West, we're also very collective oriented people. So we're close to each other, and we're more in touch with our bodies. And I think that there's something very spiritual there, that we can detect or pick up on energies, even though a lot of things are not said directly or verbally. And so when I was in the States for a decade, that's something that I missed about the Philippines, unless I'm with like a Filipino American community. But there's something about like being in the Philippines where we're so connected to the land, even though we don't talk about it that often. And even though we don't talk about or think about this directly, but I think that we are still in close proximity with our ancestors, who are also intuitive, who believed in animism, you know, that a lot of things that seem inanimate have life in there. It's even right now I'm like struggling to explain it, because it's like the essence is there, but it can't be put into words.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I think that the way we see it today is that there's so much magic in the world that it's just what I love about the spirituality of our ancestors, which is still practiced today in many different forms, that we see spirits in nature. I think that it's an expression of how we see nature as both beautiful and terrifying.
Yes.
Uh-huh. A beautiful, dangerous mother, actually. Mother Earth, a beautiful and dangerous mother. And so we see this world as filled with beings that can either help or harm us, but that we cannot control. That we can try, we can cast spells, but they have their own volition, they have their own will, that the way that we interact with them, based on a lot of superstitions actually, is to be quiet, don't be too loud, don't disturb them, let them be. And I think that that's also a beautiful way that we approach the world, even maybe in a more secular, in the secular aspect of this idea, the spiritual idea, is that nature is already by itself, without even thinking about spirits yet, it's already beautiful and dangerous.
Right.
So respecting that, it being in awe and being in wonderment of the whole of creation, being that you are part of it, not as something that was born into it as if you came from somewhere else, but that you grew out from. You grew out of this whole organism, as Alan Watts said. And that's where it connects, I think, with the idea that once you recognize that, then you start to believe that, oh, nature is not just beautiful, it's spiritual.
Yes.
It's a creation.
Yeah.
It's the expression of God's spirit through language. Let there be light. And immediately there was light. And all of it was created. And from in the beginning was the word, and so on. And so here we are with all that.
Mm-hmm. I'm like so moved. I feel like I'm tearing up, because one, it just makes me think about my relationship with the natural world, with mother, with Mother Earth, and how her beauty and the terror kind of demands my reverence. You know, it makes sense why in indigenous communities people ask for consent as they enter certain spaces. Like they ask permission if they may enter, if they may pluck the fruits, pluck the plants, pluck the flowers. It makes me think about how it also makes me think about my forms of consumption and the extent of my own consumption, and how that's so one-sided. Like I just keep mindlessly consuming Mother Earth's children in ways that are excessive and unethical in terms of distribution and production.
If you think about it, there's enough for everyone.
Yes, exactly, abundance.
It's just as some people tend to take more than what they should.
Right, they privatize and pollute resources that are already there. Like they make us pay for our water when the earth is 2/3 water.
Oh man, and humans as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.